thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
It's time to ask the pharmacist. Elizabeth Roddick joins us. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
And before we do anything, I spied somebody moonlighting on BBC Question Time a couple of weeks ago. Who was that? Looked remarkably like you.
Yes, it was me.
Yeah. And did you get to ask? Well, you did actually. You got to ask your question,
yeah,
didn't you?
I didn't realise, but on the night there were probably about 200 questions given in to the producers. And while we're doing a warm-up, they choose the question. I think mine was picked because it was very topical. There'd just been a report on research suggesting there could be up to 50% reduction in acute infections for people with coughs and colds if they took vitamin D. And as far as putting vitamin D in food is concerned, I don't know. You're probably too young, Simon. Do you remember the Glasgow grandmother who took Strathclyde Regional Council to court to stop fluoridation, the addition of fluoride to water? It was in the 80s. And judging by the reaction from the questionnaire, some of the audience in the question time, what might happen again is that if you say or government say we're going to add a particular thing, in this case, vitamin D to food, you might get a similar case where somebody does take them to court. But also, can we be sure that the people who really should be taking vitamin D, the pregnant mothers maybe in deprived areas and also vulnerable adults in residential homes, would they be taking, first of all, that particular food? And also, would they be taking enough to get their levels up? So I think what we should be doing is all health professionals should be making sure that these groups of people are aware to take vitamin D and, where appropriate, perhaps get them prescribed by their GP.
And not include it in food then?
I think that's going to be a difficult one to maybe get over to the public, and I think we should be targeting with supplements. Interestingly enough, the SACN guidelines, that was 2016, they suggested we should all be supplementing with vitamin D at the moment, 400 international units. And remember, we get vitamin D from the sun. And of course, the further north you go, it's more and more difficult to make that vitamin D on your skin.
So supplementing is really the only way to do that, isn't it?
I think it's important, and I think the fact that the guidelines suggested we should be taking vitamin D, let's do it.
Let's do it. as Nike used to say. Right, well, we've got lots more to cover, actually, Elizabeth, and I had some things jotted down here, and I've just flicked them out the way. But one of the things we're going to be talking about is, now, five a day, that's wrong. It's 10 a day now. So let's talk about what kind of portions are we talking about here? Because we'll be in all day eating vegetables.
Yeah, I suppose a portion is something like a banana, an apple, a pear, a handful of grapes, something like a bowl of salad, maybe an average tomato. There's lots of different ones. And I think the researchers suggested that, and it was a great conglomeration of researchers, Norway, London, Leeds, United States. And what they did was they looked at the fruit and veg intake of people and compared it with health outcomes. And that's what this research is about, suggesting we should take 10 pieces of fruit and veg a day. And they looked at heart disease, cardiovascular disease, cancer, stroke and death. And the first question is, I thought from the researcher, how many studies were maybe left out that they looked at, and would that make a difference to the conclusion? And they certainly looked at a large number of people and wanted to know if they increased the amount of fruit and vegetables they ate from, say, 200 grams a day, what difference that would make to health. Now, some of the results were great. 7.5 million early deaths could have been avoided by increasing that 200 to 800 grams. Even if they increased fruit and veg by 200 grams a day, then the risk of heart disease reduced 8%, less 16% stroke, 3% cancer. There's a long list of fruit and vegetables that should be taken, and apples and pears seem to figure preventing all of the diseases, particularly
keeps the doctor away.
Yes, you're right. And of course, they added in things like green leafy vegetables, even pickled vegetables if you want to stop strokes. Now, if we look at all cause of death, as well as apples and pears, there were berries, citrus fruits, cooked raw vegetables, green leafy vegetables, and really a wide variety of different ones. Now, what I wondered was, maybe I can give you some tips for trying to get more of these in. I was thinking about, for instance, having a salad with a meal. maybe making a smoothie, but particularly with green leaves and salads, maybe rather than fruit. We don't want to overload ourselves with natural sugars. And having healthy snacks, things like dried fruits, sticks of cucumber, celery, carrots. So I think the problem with some of them is if you eat a whole load of potatoes, for example, that's a starchy food. And just remember that starch eventually becomes sugar in the body, and so that's not good. Maybe sweet potatoes instead. I don't know if you've heard of the comment that the expression that a plate of chips is a Glasgow salad.
I haven't heard it. I can imagine it being said, yeah.
But I think it's variety and trying to make sure that you take some really good healthy food in a balanced diet.
Yeah, but I think for a lot of us, it requires a rethink of how we eat, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're right, because nowadays, certainly with our work practices, we're eating very quickly, which again will not give you the nutrition you need. You're eating too quickly. You're maybe eating fast foods. It's something quick and easy. And I always say to people, well, is it possible to maybe plan the week ahead, plan your food?
Of course, you used to do that, didn't we, in the old days?
Yeah, well, yeah, you'll remember that.
I don't remember that, no. My mum used to have, you know, you'd have certain meals, certain days. It was all not rigid, but you kind of knew what you were going to get, kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they all produced it from scratch as well, so you weren't using processed food. And processed food that you buy in the supermarkets has more salt and more sugar, so generally less healthy.
All right, don't go on. Right, we move on to a half-hour stroll a day can help women who've survived breast cancer prevent the killer disease returning. Now, we've touched on this before, haven't we, about exercise?
Yeah, many women who've had breast cancer unfortunately find their treatment can have a heavy toll on them. They don't feel like exercising, but the recommendation is that you should return to exercise in a gradual way. Also, some breast cancers may return despite lifestyle changes, so patients shouldn't feel as if they've failed in some way if it returns. The researchers were from Canada and they looked at about 20 studies, which, looking at physical activity, that reduced the risk of death by about 40%. They also looked at whether weight would make a difference to survival, but that wasn't conclusive. But certainly, at the initial diagnosis, if you are overweight, then that has poorer outcomes. Diet was another one that they looked at, another area they looked at in this research, and there wasn't much evidence that a healthy diet of fruits and vegetables, if we've just talked about, compared with high fat and sugar, did make a difference. But of course, it is, we know now that it is very healthy, and it will improve your health if you have a healthy diet. And smoking clearly is a big risk for breast cancer. And also reducing alcohol consumption can reduce the risk. Maybe one or less drinks in a day. That reduces of the risk of new cancers occurring. It's not possible to say categorically if you exercise regularly, breast cancer will not recur. But I think everyone knows now exercising is generally beneficial, so it's worthwhile doing exercise that you enjoy to give you the best chance of a healthy life after cancer.
And I had heard in other places that in some of these cancers, your survival rates may be up by 50% by even though you're on recovery, but you're exercising. Yep. So it definitely does seem to be good for us, doesn't it? Now, scientists found antibiotics illegally available on 45% of websites they tested. Now, when we talk about, in fact, we're talking about it earlier, about building up an immunity to antibiotics, that's quite staggering.
Yeah, I mean, this was a group of UK researchers who did an internet search for buying antibiotics online. And they landed on 20 websites, and they wanted to check the registration or the legality of the online pharmacies. And they also wanted to identify any patient safety issues. And lastly, was the antibiotic choice the consumer or the prescriber? In other words, was the customer able to just choose the antibiotic and put that into their basket, or were they diverted to a prescriber first? And the results were that 15 of the 20 pharmacies were not registered with a professional body, the General Pharmaceutical Council or the MHRA. And I've talked about the MHRA before. That's the regulatory agency. That's the body that decides on the safety of medicines. And they also investigate websites that they think are operating illegally. And 16 of the 20 had the consumer choosing the antibiotic, not the doctor. And 9 out of the 20 didn't require a prescription before buying. 14 of them didn't even provide any information about safety and possible side effects. At the end of the study, I believe all 20 were reported to the MHRA for investigation, that regulatory agency.
Well, that's the thing, regulating. I mean, should we buy any kind of prescription drugs, really, from the internet? Especially antibiotics.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that Professor Dame Sally Davis recently, the chief medical officer, she was stating it's essential we look after our antibiotics and only use them when clinically appropriate. Basically, if our antibiotics cease to work, and that's that resistance we're talking about, then routine operations, hip replacements, chemotherapy, cesareans, they could be put into jeopardy. And generally, there are very, very tight controls over medicine. That if you go into your local pharmacy, medicine's on the internet, on the other hand, from an unknown source, in other words, not a registered pharmacy or under the MHRA, you could be buying, for example, a dummy drug, or it may not contain the required amount of medicine, or worse, be contaminated with substances such as heavy metals. Now, concerning antibiotics, how do you know if you're getting the correct one for the infection you've got? Or indeed, if maybe when you're buying a medicine, it could well interact with one of the medications you're already taking. And how are you taking a long enough course of it? I mean, health professionals need to prescribe antibiotics really only when necessary. And members of the public, you know, we're saying to you, please, if it's a viral infection, you don't need an antibiotic. And so please don't ask for one. I mean, this building up of resistance is now a global problem.
All righty, thank you for that. We're going to move on now. We're getting low on time, and I want to get this in. Taking work home can be deadly, just what the boss is listening.
That's right. Researchers were from the UK, Italy and Norway and examined a group of workers in the financial sector. And they averaged age between 20 and 62, and 70% of them were male. They were asked questions on something called rumination. Now, that's worry. And they were divided into high ruminators, that's frequent worriers, and also infrequent worriers. And there's a fitness band that measured their heart rate and an accelerometer to measure physical activity. If you're stressed, then the heartbeats can be variable. Reduced variability is a sign of stress. And they found that the high ruminators, in other words, the frequent worriers, were less relaxed than the low ruminators. The research didn't prove that this could eventually cause premature death, but constantly worrying about work, it's definitely not good for mental health, well-being and your health.
But then there's that catch-22 that you've got work that you must do and you take home. You think, right, I don't do that, I'm not going to work at home. But then you've got the stress because you didn't get it done. So it's that. What are some ways that we can do some stress relief, would you say? Sensible.
Yeah, I think some people find they're always agreeing. So they're saying, yes, of course, I'll do this when their boss approaches them. And I think one of the things maybe is to think about knowing a reasonable time. You're in the middle of something, you know when that work is going to finish. And it means if you're asked to do something else, you can say categorically, this is going to take me this length of time. And recognising also that if you are stressed, you need to seek help very quickly from a manager or perhaps even your own doctor, because you can get, obviously, nip it in the bud before it gets out of control. So please think about asking for help if you are stressed. And as I say, your own doctor, have a chat with them if you need to.
I think as well in the economic climate we have cutbacks, and yet, you know, companies are expecting the same amount of work to be done or more, but with less resources. So it's something that's not necessarily going to go away. So it's better to learn how to have a strategy. Yeah,
it's how to deal with it.
Right, Elizabeth, thank you. You've raised loads of points there. If you have any questions about anything we've talked about, don't forget you can get in touch with me here at R&IB Connect Radio, or you can get in touch with Elizabeth directly. Now, you've got your main website, which is all the W's dot...
newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
Or you can find out some of the great stuff you've got on your other health website about vitamin D.
newlifehealthcare.co.uk.
There you go. Lovely to see you, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Simon.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.